Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
Old Loves by Carl Edward Wagner. He had loved her for 20 years, and today he would meet her for the first time. Her name was Elizabeth Kent, but to him she would always be Stacy Steele. Alex Webley had been an undergraduate in the mid-1960s when The Agency premiered on night television. This had been at the height of the fad for spy shows, James Bond and imitations beyond counting, then counter moves towards either extreme of realism or parody. Upon such a full sea, The Agency almost certainly would have sunk unnoticed had it not been for the series' two stars, or more particularly had it not been for Elizabeth Kent. In the role of Stacy Steele, she played the delightfully eccentric kooky, was the expression of the times, partner of secret agent Harrison Dane, portrayed by actor Garrett Channing. An aging matinee idol, to use the expression of an earlier time, the two were employed by an enigmatic organization referred to simply as the Agency, which dispatched Dane and Miss Steele off upon dangerous assignments throughout the world. Again, nothing in the formula to distinguish the Agency from the rest of the pack, except for the charisma of its co-stars and for a certain stylish audacity to its script that became more outrageous as the series progressed. Initially, it was to have been a straight secret agent series, strong male lead assisted by curvaceous ingenue, who, scatterbrained exploits, would provide at least one good capture and rescue per episode. The role of Harrison Dane went to Garrett Channing, a fortuitous piece of contrary to typecasting of an actor best remembered as a suave villain or debonair hero of various forgettable 1950 programmers. Channing had once been labeled a poor man's James Mason, and perhaps the casting director had recalled that James Mason had been an early choice to portray James Bond. The son of a Bloomsbury greengrocer, Channing's Hollywood-nurtured sophistication and charm seemed ideal for the role of American super spy Harrison Dane. Then, through a casting miracle that could only have been through chance and not genius, the role of Stacy Steele went to Elizabeth Kent. Miss Kent was a tall, leggy dancer whose acting experience consisted of several on and off Broadway plays and a brief role in the most recent James Bond film. Playboy, as was its custom, ran a pictorial feature on the lovelies of the latest Bond film and devoted 2 full pages to the blonde Miss Kent, revealing rather more of her than was permitted in the movies of the day. It brought her to the attention of the casting director, and Elizabeth Kent became Stacy Steele. Became Stacy Steele, almost literally. Later they would say that the role destroyed Elizabeth Kent. Her career dwindled miserably afterward. Some critics suggested that Miss Kent had been blackballed by the industry after her unexpected departure from the series resulted in the Agency's plummeting in the ratings and merciful cancellation after a partial season with a forgettable double D cup Malibu blonde stumped into the role of female lead. The consensus, however, pointed out that after her role in the Agency, it was Stacy Steele who was in demand and not Elizabeth Kent. Once the fad for secret agent films passed, there were no more roles for Stacy Steele nor for Elizabeth Kent. A situation comedy series flopped after 3 episodes. 2 films with her in straight dramatic roles were noteworthy bombs, and a 3rd was never released. Even if Elizabeth Kent succeeded in convincing some producer-director that she was not Stacy Steele, her public remained adamant. Her only film appearance within the past decade had been as the villainess in a Hong Kong chop fooey opus, Tiger Fists Against the Dragon. Perhaps it lost some little in translation. Inevitably, the Agency attracted a dedicated fan following and Stacy Steele became a cult figure. The same was true to a lesser extent for Garrett Channing, although that actor's death not long after the series cancellation spared him both the benefits and the hazards of such a status. The note he left upon his desk, "Goodbye, world. I can no longer accept your tedium," was considered an enviable exit line. The agency premiered in the mid-1960s, just catching the crest of the Carnaby Street mod look craze. Harrison Dane, suave, super spy, and mature man of the world, though he was decidedly hip to today's swinging beat, and the promos boldly characterized him as a mod James Bond. No business suits and narrow ties for Harrison Dane. "We want to take the stuffiness out of secret agenting," to quote one producer, as a sophisticated counterpart to the irrepressible Miss Steele. Dane saved the day once a week, attired in various outfits, consisting of bell-bottom trousers, paisley shirts, narrow jackets, and lots of beads and badges. If one critic described Harrison Dane as a middle-aged beetle, the public applauded this anti-establishment super spy. No such criticism touched the image of Stacy Steele. Stacy Steele was the American viewing public's ideal of the swinging London bird. Her long-legged physique, perfectly suited to vinyl mini dresses and thigh-high boots. Each episode became a showcase for her daring fashions. Briefest of miniskirts, hip-hugging leather bell-bottoms, see-through, as much as the censors would permit, blouses, cut-out dresses, patent boots, psychedelic jewelry, groovy hats, all that was Marvy fab and gear. There was talk of opening a franchise of Stacy Steele boutiques, and Miss Steele became a featured model in various popular magazines, seeking to portray the latest fashions for the liberated lady of the 60s. By this time, Elizabeth Kent's carefully modulated BBC accent would never betray her Long Island birthright to the unstudied ear. Stacy Steele was instant pin-up material. Her stills of the mini-skirted secret agent covered many a dorm wall beside blow-ups of bogey and black-like posters. Later, detractors argued that the agency would never have lasted its first season without Stacy Steele's legs, and that the series was little more than an American version of one of the imported British spy shows. Fans rebutted such charges with the assertion that it had all started with James Bond anyway, and the agency proved that the Americans could do it best. Pin-up photos of Stacy Steele continued to sell well 20 years after. While the agency may have been plainly derivative of a popular British series, American viewers made it their favorite show against formidable primetime competition from the other two networks. For three glorious seasons, the agency ruled Saturday nights. Then, Elizabeth Kent's sudden departure from the series. Catastrophe, mediocrity, cancellation. But not oblivion. The series passed into syndication and thus into the twilight zone of odd-hour reruns on local channels and independent network. Old fans remembered, new fans were born. The agency developed a cult following, and Stacy Steele became its goddess. In that sense, among its priesthood was Alex Webley. He had begun his worship 2 decades ago in the TV lounge of a college dorm, amidst the incense of spilled beer and tobacco smoke and inspired choir whistles and guffaws. The first night he watched the agency, Webley had been blowing some tangerine with an old high school buddy who had brought a little down from Antioch. Webley didn't think he'd gotten off, but when the mini-skirted Miss Steele used dazzling karate chops to dispatch 2 baddies, he knew he was having a religious experience. After that, he watched the agency every Saturday night without fail. It would have put a crimp in his dating if Webley had been one who dated. His greatest moment in college was a night when he stood off 2 drunken jocks, either of whom could have folded Webley in half, who wanted to switch channels from the agency to watch a basketball game. They might have stuffed Webley into a wastebasket had not other agency fans added their voices to his protest. Thus did Alex Webley learn the power of Fans United. It was a power he experienced again with news of Elizabeth Kent's departure from the series, and later when the agency was canceled. Webley was one of the thousands of fans who wrote to the network demanding that Stacy Steele be brought back to the show. Never mind how. With the show's cancellation, Webley helped circulate a petition that the agency be continued with or without Stacy Steele. The producers were impressed by such show of support, but the network pointed out that 10,000 signatures from the Lunatic Fringe do not cause a flicker on the Nielsen ratings. Without Stacy Steele, the agency was out of business, and that was that. Besides, the fad for overdone spy shows was over and done. Alex Webley kept the file of clippings and stills, promotional items, comic books, and paperbacks, anything at all pertaining to the agency and to the great love of his life, Elizabeth Kent. From the beginning, there were fanzines, crudely printed amateur publications devoted to the agency, and one or two unofficial fan clubs. Webley joined and subscribed to them all. Undergraduate enthusiasms developed into a lifelong hobby. Corresponding with other diehard fans and collecting agency memorabilia became his preoccupying outside interest in the course of taking a doctorate in neurobiology. He was spared from Vietnam by high school pressure and from any long-term romantic involvement by a highly introverted nature. Following his doctorate, Webley landed a research position at one of the pharmaceutical laboratories, where he performed his duties efficiently and maintained an attitude of polite aloofness towards his co-workers. Someone there dubbed him the Invisible Man, but there was no malice to the mot juste. At his condo, the door of the spare bedroom wore a brass and walnut plaque that read HQ. Webley had made it himself. Inside were filing cabinets, bookshelves, and his desk. The walls were papered with posters and stills, most of them photos of Stacy Steele. A glass-fronted cabinet held video cassettes of all the agency's episodes, painstakingly acquired through trades with other fans. The day he completed the set, Webley drank most of a bottle of Glenfiddich, Dane's and Miss Steele's favorite potation, and afterward became quite ill. By now, Webley's enthusiasm had expanded to all of the spy shows and films of the period, but old loves die hard, and the agency remained his chief interest. Webley was editor-publisher of Special Assignment, a quarterly amateur magazine devoted to the spy craze of the 60s. Special Assignment was more than a cut above the mimeographed fanzines that Webley had first begun to collect. His magazine was computer typeset and boasted slick paper and color covers. By its 10th issue, Special Assignment had a circulation of several thousand with distribution through specialty bookshops here and abroad. It was a hobby project that took up all Webley's free time and much of his living space, and Webley was content. Almost content. Special Assignment carried photographs and articles on every aspect of the old spy shows, along with interviews of many of the actors and actresses. Webley, of course, devoted a good many pages of each issue to the agency and to Stacy Steele. But to his chagrin, he was unable to obtain an interview with Elizabeth Kent. Since her once disastrous comeback attempt, Miss Kent preferred a life of a recluse. There was some dignity to be salvaged in anonymity. Miss Kent did not grant interviews. She did not make public appearances. She did not answer fan mail. After 10 years, the world forgot Elizabeth Kent, but her fans still remembered Stacy Steele. Webley had several years prior managed to secure Elizabeth Kent's address, no mean accomplishment in itself, but his rather gushing fan letters had not elicited any sort of reply. Not easily daunted, Webley faithfully sent Miss Kent each new issue of Special Assignment, personally inscribed to her, and with each issue he included a long letter of praise for her deathless characterization of Stacy Steele, along with a plea to be granted an interview. Webley never gave up hope despite Miss Kent's unbroken silence. When he at last did receive a letter from Miss Kent, graciously granting him the long-sought interview, Webley knew that his life is just and that the faithful shall be rewarded. He caught one of those red-eye special flights out to Los Angeles, but was too excited to catch any sleep on the way. Instead, he reread a well-worn paperback novelization of one of his favorite agency episodes, The Chain Lightning Caper, and mentally reviewed the questions he would ask Miss Kent, still not quite able to believe that he would be talking with her in another few hours. Webley checked into a thrifty family motel near the airport, unpacked, tried without success to sleep, got up, showered, and shaved. The economy flight he had taken hadn't served a meal, but then it had been all Webley could manage just to finish his complimentary soft beverage. The 3-hour time change left his system rather disordered in any event, so that he wasn't certain whether he actually should feel tired or hungry, were it not for his anxiousness over the coming interview. He pulled out his notes and looked over them again, managing to catch a fitful nap just before dawn. At daylight, he made himself eat a dismal breakfast in the motel restaurant, then returned to his room to shave again and to put on the clothes he had brought along for the interview. It was the best of Webley's several Harrison Dane costumes, carefully salvaged from various thrift shops and yard sales. Webley maintained a wardrobe of vintage mod clothing, and he had twice won prizes at convention masquerades. The pointed-toe Italian boots were original to the period, a lovingly maintained treasure discovered 10 years before at Goodwill Industries. The suede bell-bottoms were custom-made by an aging hippie at an aging leathercraft shop that still had a few psychedelic posters tacked to its walls. Webley tried them on at least once a month and adjusted his diet according to snugness of fit. The jacket, a sort of lavender thing that lacked collar or lapels, was found at a vintage clothing store and altered to his measurements. The paisley shirt, mostly purples and greens, had been discovered at a yard sale, and the beads and medallions had come from here and there. Webley was particularly proud of his Dane cane, which he himself had constructed after the secret agent's famous weapon. It appeared to be a normal walking stick, but it contained Dane's arsenal of secret weapons and paraphernalia, including a radio transmitter, recording device, tear gas, and laser. Harrison Dane was never without his marvelous cane, and good thing, too. Alex Webley had caused rather a stir at the airport check-in before airline officials finally permitted him to transport his Dane cane via baggage. Webley still clung to the modified Beatles haircut that Harrison Dane affected. He combed it now carefully, and he studied his reflection in the room's ripply mirror, the very image of Harrison Dane. Stacy Steele, Miss Kent, would no doubt be impressed by the pains he had taken. It would have been great to drive out in a Shelby Cobra like Dane's, but instead he called for a cab. Not a Beverly Hills address, Webley sadly noted, as a taxi drove him to one of those innumerable canyon neighborhoods tottering on steep hillsides and the brink of shabbiness. Her house was small and featureless, a little box propped up on the hillside beside a jagged row of others like it, distinguishable one from another chiefly by the degree of seediness and the cars parked in front. Some cheap development from the 1950s, Webley judged, and another 10 years likely would see the one still standing, bought up in the land used for some cheap condo development. He felt increasingly sad about it. He had been prepared to announce his arrival to some uniformed guard at the subdivision's entrance gate. Well, if it were within his power to do so, Webley intended to bring her to bear the might and majesty of special assignment to pressure these stupid producers into casting Elizabeth Kent in the new and important roles that made this interview more important than ever to Webley and to Miss Kent. He paid off the cab, tipping generously, as Harrison Dane would have done. This was perhaps fortunate, as a driver shouted after him that he had forgotten his attaché case. Webley wondered how Dane would have handled such an embarrassing lapse. Of course, Dane would never have committed such a blunder. Webley's case, also modeled after Dane's secret agent attaché case, although Webley's lacked the built-in machine gun, contained a bottle of Glenfiddich, his notes, cassette recorder, and camera. It was essential that he obtain some photographs of Miss Kent at home. Since her appearance in the unfortunate Tiger Fist film, current photos of Elizabeth Kent were not made available. Webley had heard vicious rumors that the actress had lost her looks, but he put these down to typical showbiz backstabbing, and he prayed it wasn't so. He rang the doorbell, using the tip of his cane, just as Dane always did, and waited. Posing jauntily against his cane, just as Dane always did. The seconds dragged on eternally, and there was no response. He rang again and waited. Webley looked for a car in the driveway, saw none, but the carport was closed. He rang a third time. This time the door opened, and Alex Webley knew his worship had not been in vain. "Hello, Dane," she said. "I've been expecting you." "How very good to see you, Miss Deal," said Webley. "I hope I haven't kept you waiting." And she was, Stacy Steele, just like in the agency. And Webley felt a thrill at knowing she had dressed the part just for the interview, just for him. The Hollywood gossip had been all lies, because she hardly looked a day older, although part of that was no doubt due to her appearance. Today as Stacy Steele, it was perfect. It was all there, as it should be. The thigh-high boots of black patent leather, the red leather mini-dress with love emblazoned across the breast line, the center of the O was cut out, revealing a daring glimpse of braless cleavage. The blonde bangs and iron-straight Mary Travers hair, the beads and bells, time had rolled back, and she was Stacy Steele. "Come on in, love," Miss Steele invited in her so familiar throaty purr. "Aerobics really can do wonders," Webley thought as he followed her into her living room. 20 years might have gone by, but if the agency were to be revived today, Miss Kent would step right into her old role as the Maud Madcap Miss Steele. Exercise and diet, probably. He must find some discreet way of asking her how she kept her youthful figure. The living room was a close replica of Stacy Steele's swinging London flat, enough so that Webley guessed she had removed much of the set from the Hollywood soundstage, where the series was actually shot. He sat down, not without difficulty, on the inflatable day-glow orange chair, Dane's favorite, and opened his attaché case. "I brought along a little libation," he said, presenting her with a glimfiddich. Miss Steele gladly accepted the dark green triangular bottle. "Ah, love, you always remember, don't you?" She quickly poured a generous level of the pale amber whiskey into a pair of stem glasses and offered one to Webley. Webley wanted to protest that it was too early in the day for him to tackle straight scotch, but he decided he'd rather die than break the spell of this moment. Instead, he said, "Cheers," and drank. The whiskey went down his throat smoothly and soared straight to his head. Webley blinked and set down his glass in order to paw through the contents of his case. Miss Steele had recharged his glass before he could protest, but already Webley was thinking how perfect this all was. This would be one to tell to those scoffers who had advised him against wearing his Harrison Dane costume to the interview. "Here's a copy of our latest issue." Webley hesitated only slightly. "Miss Steele?" She took the magazine from him. The cover was a still of Stacy Steele's karate chopping, a heavy and a pink foil spacesuit. "Why, that's me. How groovy." "Yes, from the Maud Martian caper, of course, and naturally you'll be featured on our next cover, along with the interview and all." The hour was an editorial plural, inasmuch as Webley was the entire staff of Special Assignment. "Fab," said Miss Steele, paging through the magazine in search of more photos of herself. Webley risked another sip of glimfiddich while he glanced around the room. However the house might appear from the outside, inside Miss Kent had lovingly maintained the ambiance of the agency. The black lights and pop art posters, the psychedelic color schemes, the beaded curtains, the oriental rugs, Indian music was playing and strewn beside the vintage KLH stereo. Webley recognized early albums from the Beatles and the Stones, from the Who and the Yardbirds, from the Ultimate Spinach and 13th Floor Elevator. He drew in a deep breath. Yes, that was incense burning on the mantelpiece. Cinnamon, Miss Steele's favorite. "That's the platinum bird you used in the malted falcon caper, isn't it?" Miss Steele touched the silver falcon statuette Webley has spotted. "The very bird. Not really made of platinum, sorry to report. And that must be the chastity belt they locked you into in the medieval mistress caper?" Again Webley pointed. "One and the same. And not very comfy on a cold day, I assure you." Webley decided he was about to sound gushy, so he finished his second whiskey. It didn't help collect his thoughts, but it did restore a little calmness. He decided not to argue, and Miss Steele refreshed their drinks. His fingers itched for his camera, but his hands were trembling too much. "You seem to have kept quite a few props from the agency," he suggested. "Isn't that the steel mask they put over your head in the silent cyborg caper? Not very comfortable either, I should imagine. At times, I did find my part a trifle confining, Miss Steele admitted, all those captures by the villains. With Harrison Dane always there, in the nick of time, Webley said, raising his glass to her. If Miss Steele was in no hurry to get through the interview, then neither was he. It wasn't all that much fun waiting to be rescued every time, Miss Steele confided. Tied out in the hot sun across a railroad track or stretched down on a rack in a moldy old dungeon. The uncivil engineer caper, Webley remembered, and the dungeon to let caper. Or being strapped to a log in a sawmill. The silver scream caper. I was brushing sawdust out of my hair for a week. And in the missing mermaid caper, they handcuffed you to an anchor and tossed you overboard. Yes. And I still have my rubber fishtail from that one. Here? Certainly. I've held on to museum's worth of costumes and props. Would you like to see the lot of it? Would I ever? Webley prayed he had brought enough film. Then I'll just give us a refill. I really think I've had enough just now, Webley begged. Why, Dane, I never knew you to say no. But one more to top things off. Agreed Webley, unable to tarnish the image of Harrison Dane, Miss Steele poured. Most of it's kept downstairs. After all, Miss Steele, this is a special occasion, Webley drank. He had a little difficulty with his stairs. He vaguely felt he was floating downward, and the Dane cane kept tripping him. But he made it to the lower level without disgracing himself. Once there, all he could manage was a breathless, out of sight. Presumably, the downstairs had been designed as a sort of large family room, complete with fireplace, cozy chairs, and at one time probably a ping-pong table or such. Miss Kent had refurnished the room with enough props and sets to reshoot the entire series. Webley could only stand and stare. It was as if an entire file of agency stills had been scattered about and transformed into three-dimensional reality. There was the stake. The natives had tied her to in the no atoll at all caper, and there was the man-eating plant that had menaced her in the Venusian vegetarian caper. In one corner stood, surely a replica, Stacy Steele's marvelous VW Beetle, sporting its wild psychedelic paint scheme and harboring a Porsche engine and drivetrain. There was the evil interrogation chair from the Earth's End caper, and behind it one of the murderous robots from the Angry Android caper. Harrison Dane's circular bed, complete with television, stereo bar, machine guns, and countless other built-in devices, was crowded beside the very torture rack from the dungeon to let caper. Cataloging just the major pieces would be an hour's work, even for Webley, and a full inventory of all the memorabilia would take at least a couple of days. Impressed, love? Webley closed his mouth. It's like the entire agency series come to life in one house, he finally said. Do browse about all you like, love. Webley stumbled across the room, trying not to touch any of the sacred relics, scarcely able to concentrate upon any one object for longer than its moments of recognition. It was all too overpowering an assault upon his sensory mechanisms. A toast to us, love. Webley didn't remember whether Miss Steele had brought along their glasses or poured fresh drinks from Harrison Dane's Art Nouveau bar, shoved against one wall next to the mind transfer machine from the Wild Wild Bunch caper. He gulped his drink without thinking, and moments later regretted it. I think I'd better sit down for a minute, Webley apologized. Drugged drinks, Miss Steele said brightly. Just like in the Earth's End caper. Quick, Dane, sit down here. Webley collapsed onto the interrogation chair as directed. It was closest, and he was about to make a scene if he didn't recover his balance. Automatic cuffs instantly secured his arms, legs, and body to the chair. Only in the Earth's End caper, said Miss Steele. I was the one they drugged and fastened into this chair, there to be horribly tortured, unless Harrison Dane came to the rescue. Webley turned his head as much as the neck restraints would permit. Miss Steele was laying out an assortment of scalpels and less obvious instruments, recognized by Webley as props from the episodes. Groovy, he managed to say, Miss Deal was assembling some sort of dental drill. I was always the victim. She smiled at him with that delightful madcap smile. I was always the one being captured, humiliated, helplessly awaiting your last-minute mock heroics. Well, not all the time, Webley protested, along with a joke. He hoped he wasn't going to be ill. Are these clamps very tight? Yes, very. The prop seems in perfect working order. I think I really ought to stretch out for a while. Most embarrassing, but I'm afraid that drinking this early. It wasn't enough that you seduced me and insisted on the abortion for the sake of our careers. It was your egotistical jealousy that finally destroyed me. You couldn't stand the fact that Stacy Steele was the real star of the agency and not Harrison Dane. So you pulled strings until you got me written out of the series. Then you did your best to ruin my career afterward. I don't feel very good, Webley muttered. I think I might be getting sick. Hoping for that last-second rescue, Stacy Steele selected a scalpel from the tray and bent over him. Webley had a breathtaking glimpse through the cutout of love, and then the blade touched his eye. The police were already there by the time Elizabeth Kent got home. Neighbors' dogs were barking at something in the brush below the house. Some kids went to see what they were after, and then the police were called. Did you know the man, Miss Kent? Miss Kent nodded her double chins. She was concentrating on stocking her liquor cabinet with the case of generic gin she'd gone out to buy with the advance check Webley had mailed her. She'd planned on fortifying herself for the interview that might mean her comeback, but her aging Nova had refused to start in the parking lot, and the road call had eaten up the remainder of the check that she'd hoped would go towards overdue rent for the one-story frame dump. She sat down heavily on the best chair of her sparsely furnished living room. He was some fan from back east, she told the investigating officer. Wanted to interview me for some fan magazine. I've got his letters somewhere. I used to be in films for a few years back. Maybe you remember? We'll need to get in touch with next of kin, the detective said. Already found the cabbie who let him out here while you were off getting towed. He was wondering if he had ever seen her in anything. At a guess, he waited around on your deck, probably leaned against the railing, got a little dizzy and went over. Might have had a heart attack or something. Elizabeth Kent was looking at the empty Glenfiddich bottle and the two glasses. Damn you, Stacy Steele, she whispered. God damn you.